Call to order the regular meeting of the Cambria Community Services District, December 15th, 2011. If you'd rise and join me in the flag salute.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I hope if there's a fire, it's here.
Who's
lighting the storm? All right. Let the record show that all four board members are present, and we'll move on to 1D, which is a report from closed session.
There are no reports from the closed session.
1E is election of officers. At the first meeting, the meeting in December, we elect officers for the board, and so we will do that at this time. And the election is for president and vice president. So, and we'll do them one at a time, I guess.
I would like to commend Merle Cliff on doing a fantastic job as board president for this past year. He has set up goals and objectives, some of which we've actually accomplished, and I want to thank him for that. However, I think that we do have kind of a tradition of moving that presidency, presidential position. Frank isn't available. I would definitely nominate my colleague
Joe
Allen for the president of the board, and that would be my recommendation for president.
Well, I would join in with the comments that Director Berger made relative to the chair. I think he's done a great job this year. Handle the meetings in a very even-handed manner. I think during some very turbulent times, I think he's done a fantastic job. And I think that he and Vice President McKinnon made a great team as president and vice president, and so I'd be pleased to second the nomination.
Any discussion? If not, all those in favor of Director McKinnon assuming the presidency, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are you going to vote, or can I call it unanimous? It's a unanimous vote. And with that, you get the seat.
Hey, my goodness. That's pretty nice.
This is...
I'm going to do that, and Kemper Holmes would like to speak after the presentation. Okay.
First and foremost, thank you very much for your vote. I appreciate that. It's going to be very difficult to fill those big shoes. And at this point, nominations for vice president.
I would nominate Mike Thompson for vice president. He was the number one vote getter of the last election, and kind of the natural progression that way. So I would nominate Director Thompson as vice chair.
I would second that nomination, even though it was only a few extra votes that he got. And I think Mike Thompson is very well deserving of being vice president. It'll create some follow-through well through next November. So I think it's a logical choice. So I second it.
Excellent. With that, any discussion? Not. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So be it. Vice President. Next item. Special reports. Sheriffs. Sheriff here?
I don't see.
Whoa.
There you go. Get the names changed. I needed that a minute ago.
Should we change the acknowledgments of the agenda then?
From number three, acknowledgments and presentations, we are going to delay the recognizing of former director Frank D'Amico until hopefully he's here in the near term, hopefully next session. Item B is recognizing Captain Michael Gallagher. And with that, Mr. Gallagher, come to the podium. I'm going to read this to him. Fire Department in 2003 at the rank of captain after serving for 13 years on the Squaw Valley Fire Department, and whereas Captain Michael Gallagher utilized his skills as an officer to lead and train others to advance the mission and goals for the CCSD Fire Department and to benefit the Cambria community, and whereas Captain Michael Gallagher provided thousands of hours of company officer leadership for the Cambria CSD Fire Department and community to ensure the fire department was managed and operated efficiently, and whereas Captain Michael Gallagher participated as the hazmat technical specialist, technical rescue specialist, and wildland strike team leader, forwarding the expertise and capability of all members of the CCSD Fire Department and providing a higher level of service to the Cambria community. And whereas Captain Michael Gallagher wrote applications for many thousands of dollars in grant funding to benefit the Cambria CSD Fire Department and emergency services in the Cambria community. And whereas Captain Michael Gallagher showed a commitment to lifelong learning and education by pursuing ongoing training, coursework at the National Fire Academy, and pursuit of his Chief Officer Certification. He will be leaving the CCSD Fire Department after 9 years of service to further his career as Battalion Chief with the Carpinteria Summerland Fire Department, the Cambria CSD Fire Department, the CSD residents, and visitors to Cambria have benefited tremendously from the dedicated community service and support. Now, therefore, by the virtue of the authority vested in me as president and on behalf of the board of directors and staff of the Cambria Community Services District, I hereby extend to Captain Michael Gallagher on this 15th day of December 2011 our sincere appreciation and gratitude of the entire Cambria community, the staff and the employees of the Cambria Community Service District for his dedicated, exemplary, and distinguished customer service. Fabulous.
Thank you, sir.
Stay. Captain William Hollingsworth, Cambria Fire Department. President McKinnon, board, staff, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to speak today. We also wanted to recognize Captain Gallagher for what he's done for our agency. You've probably heard it said before that the fire service is like a family. That sentiment is undoubtedly true. This profession requires that you commit yourself to the betterment of the department, the community in which you work and live, and that you dedicate yourself to helping others in need. Captain Mike Gallagher embodies these ideals. Captain Gallagher came to the fire department almost 10 years ago. He has helped revitalize our training and prevention programs. He has been heavily invested in the personal and career growth of those around him. For example, in that same time frame, we've had 11 of our reserve personnel move on to full-time careers within the emergency field. That percentage from the agency this size is unheard of in this field. Captain Gallagher was a key component to getting those employees trained appropriately and ready for a career. During the ever-present economic hardship that we face, Captain Gallagher has been instrumental in grant writing, with hundreds of thousands of dollars received for training and equipment. It would be quite difficult to see Mike leave. However, we are excited for his professional advancement to battalion chief. And I know that he's excited and supportive for the opportunity created by this vacancy. The fact that we have a number of individuals within our ranks qualified and ready to test for advancement is due in part to his legacy. Mike, from the entire department, thank you. You will be missed, and good luck.
I'm short. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Emily Torlano. I'm an engineer at Cambria Fire, and I've had the honor to work with Captain Mike Gallagher for the last 8 years. I've been on his shift, so every time we're on duty together. I never thought his parting day would come. I've counted hours, minutes, and seconds, and now that this day is here, we are all melancholy. Melancholy because we're losing not just our captain, but our brother. Captain Gallagher not only inspired us, but he mentored us and shaped our lives impermeably and forever. He continually challenged us to step outside our comfort zone, letting us learn from our mistakes, however, watching closely in case we fail. For this, I am grateful. I would not be where I am today if Captain Gallagher had not stumbled into our little community. His leadership style is one that I will mirror throughout my fire service career. As he guided us through these past 8 years, I don't know if he ever realized the impact he had on our lives. Thank you, Captain Gallagher. It's been an honor to work on your shift.
Thank you. I'm proud and privileged to be here on behalf of the Cambria Firefighters Association. I am Sean Horton and a proud firefighter for Cambria. It is my deep pleasure to present a plaque to Captain Mike Gallagher on behalf of the association. As it's been mentioned, this is a bittersweet moment for all of us. At the same time, we're very proud. He has built a good foundation with our firefighters, and he will be sorely missed. Whoever has to step in his shoes has a big void to fill, and I hope the community recognizes that. Thank you, Cap, for everything. Come on up.
Thank you for the opportunity of letting us present that publicly.
Thank you. Mike, is there anything you would like to say?
December 27th will be the start of my last shift. I leave 0800 December 28th.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I can't tell you how humbled I am by this presentation. To be honest, I haven't allowed myself to think about leaving, because it's like they said, this is family, and I'm leaving my family for another family. So this is the first time that I've actually let this sink in, that I'm leaving this community and this crew, my family. I want to thank people of Cambria, this community, for the opportunity to serve. It's been an absolute honor. There's so many people that I need to thank for my success. The teamwork between Cal Fire, the Cal Fire crew, who's back there at Station 10, the phenomenal work of the healthcare district crew, and the CCSD crew. Again, it's been an absolute honor. I've been in the fire service 24 years, and I've never worked better or been more proud of a group of people than I am of the fire department that serves you guys. The full-time staff's amazing. I can't say enough about Emily Torlano. She's been an engineer working on my shift for years and years, and I'm immensely proud of what she's done and where she's going. And any success that I've had has been because of a team effort between everyone in the back of the room. I didn't do anything by myself. It's everything we do in the fire service is a team effort. So I need to thank them, and I really need to thank the reserves. They're the hardest working, most professional, most motivated crew of people, of firefighters that I've ever worked with. And I hope the community realizes that and appreciates what they have in the reserves. They truly are trained to a higher level than a lot of full-time professional firefighters. They work for a little bit over minimum wage and no benefits. So please look after them when I'm gone. They are phenomenal, and again, I couldn't do anything I did without them. It's a team effort. And finally, I wanted to thank Chief Miller, who can't be here, but he pushed me from the moment he got here to not only do the best I could for this fire department and the community, but also to better myself and to pursue my education so that I could make the most of this career. The fire service has so much to offer, and it would have been very easy for me to just sit out the rest of the next 4.5 years, feeling pretty comfortable here and doing the best I could. But Chief Miller really pushed me to find the best in me and challenge myself to the next level, which is battalion chief. I also need to thank the community one more time, and for Chief Miller for showing me the real value of customer service. What we went through as a community and a fire department and organization this spring and really proved to me the value of what's important in the fire service, and that's taking care of your troops and customer service. So thank you to everyone. It's been an absolute honor, and you guys can count on me to help you with grants or anything else you need. I'll always be here. I'll always be part of the family in the back of the room. Thank you.
I must say we are truly fortunate to have such a professional and responsive fire department. I don't think there's ever been a time where I've spoken to an individual where they haven't remarked almost the security blanket that is offered by your people. So again, many thanks and the best of luck in your chosen profession and down south. Thank you again, Mike. Moving on, number four, public comment, addressing the board with items that are not on the agenda, and hopefully we keep it to 3 minutes like it's been in the past. First one to speak would be Amanda Rice.
Good afternoon, President Micken and board and staff. Of course, you know I'm standing here because I'm here to carry on Funky Blue's tradition, how many days it's been since the moratorium was declared, which is now over 10 years. It's been 3,683 days, and we've come a really long way. We hit a huge stumbling block with a particular water alternative that's been chosen by the board on Friday at the Coastal Commission. I look forward to that report. I also wanted to make sure that the board is aware so you can be pondering until next Tuesday. I did put in my application to hopefully be appointed by the board along with the other people that have applied. 10 years, 1 month, and a day. It's been a long time. It's time to do something about that other than desal, probably.
Thank you. Next, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. New President. Look forward to your congeniality in the course of the year and your interesting asides, as you always say. This is a not on any agenda item particularly. More than a decade ago, when I lived in Boston, my dear friend and figment of my imagination, Glorifica Quirk, taught me how to keep my eyes open for litter. When people toss things on the sidewalk and on the street, she said people were sharing, and she picked it up. One day, Glorifica made a necklace of her litter finds and offered it to the kindergarten down the street. In many accents, the Boston children saw the necklace and said, "Yuck." But they did not want to hurt her feelings. So they said, "We'll help you make it more beautiful, Glorifica." Sticky chewing gum, candy wrappers, and damp Kleenex were added to the necklace, but they still did not want to wear it. 10 days ago, Glorifica and I spent some time at Shamel Park and Shamel Beach picking up litter. We took the litter home and made a necklace to take to the first and second graders at the grammar school. Tuesday and yesterday morning, the students stared at it, as you might all do, and said, "Guess." Yuck. But Glorifica did hear one boy say, "Awesome," and a first grader girl say, "I think it's beautiful." Then they talked about recycling and conserving those two. However, nobody wanted to wear the necklace from Shamel Park and Shamel Beach. Last night, Glorifica thought about the crabs and the barnacles, the sea otter and the elephant seal, and all the other sea creatures that children in first and second grade had studied this year. She wrote a poem and asked me if I would read it to you. The title of the poem is "Ocean Creature's Complaint." "Litter, litter everywhere. It's clogging up our drink. Plastic, plastic everywhere. It's deeper than you think. Garbage, garbage everywhere. It's plugging up the sink. Trashy, trashy everywhere. It's right up to the brink. Rubbish, rubbish everywhere. It's making plankton slink. Refuse, refuse everywhere. It's spreading while you blink. Wasteful, wasteful everywhere. It's how you humans think. Litter, litter everywhere. It's making our home stink." That's the ocean creature's complaint. And I ask you only one more thing. It's not the usual thing to do, but perhaps the new president might wear the...
I'll consider it.
I'll keep it in case you decide. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, very nice. Yes, very nice. Well done. Finally, Tina Dickinson.
Tina Dickinson, Cambria. Congratulations, President McKinnon, Vice President, I think it was Thompson, right? Yes. A little confusing there for a while. To follow up on Elizabeth's comments, I attended the California Coastal Commission meeting in San Francisco on Friday, and they had a marvelous acknowledgement of the volunteers, some of the volunteers who actually work within the commissions under their auspices. And it was a lengthy item on the agenda, but it was amazing from each one of these, mostly younger people, who spend their time, as Elizabeth does, as I do. I mean, I was picking up trash in San Francisco. My daughter's at Stanford. I was picking up trash on that usually very clean campus. But I think we all have to kind of help do our part. When I came here, I didn't want visitors coming to Cambria and seeing trash on our streets or on our beaches. But when you see what it does to the marine life, I saw a pelican opened up in an autopsy just full of plastic bags and trash. Sea mammals strangulated, and it's critical that I think here in Cambria, all throughout the world really, but we can do our part here. Elizabeth does a tremendous job, and I honor her and congratulate her for it, but I think we all need to do something. Now, I have a question. It says that there's going to be distributed today on the Urban Water Management Plan a packet. I don't think we have that. Is there anything that you're going to have for us today regarding that? It says it's going to be in the December 15th packet.
I think that's going to be pulled for next meeting, correct, General Manager Gruber?
That is correct. We will ask that the board postpone that till January, but District Engineer Bob Greshens does have a brief PowerPoint presentation that he'd like to give. And if you could open public comment if you so desire to receive public comment regarding the Urban Water Management Plan, have Bob's presentation, and ask that we extend it till January till he can finish Chapter 6, which is really the most critical component of the Urban Water Management Plan, the DMM, which is the demand measurement measurement model. So, correct. Okay.
And I just leave you with keep our beaches clean and safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, number five, agenda review. Any additions or deletions, board members?
Mr. President, I'd like to just pull item E for a comment.
Item E.
The OTS grant.
Okay. Any others? Okay. Let's move on then to managers and board reports.
President McKinnon, I have to get used to saying that, Vice President Thompson and board members. In your board packet, you'll notice that there is the DSEL project update, and then an addendum to my report from now on, in addition to my general manager's report, is a project update report from the district engineer, Bob Greshens. That follows in suit what I've been doing with the other department managers and water, wastewater. We added facilities, if you remember. We've added administration, which is done by Monique. And then I would like Bob to separate the two, and then he'll comment as part of my manager's report on the projects that he's working on. It kind of delineates the two between the project, the DSAL, and other projects that he's working on. So with that, I'll turn it over to Bob for his update on the desalination project, and then I'll start on my manager's report if that's okay with the board.
Okay.
Thank you, Jerry. Mr. President, members of the board. The My apologies. The report that's in your packet was written on the Wednesday before the Coastal Commission hearing, which was on Friday the 9th. So I didn't have that information at the time, so I'll just give you a verbal update on that. I think most people have heard the commission voted against the Army Corps' coastal consistency determination as far as their activities to go out and collect data on the beach. The condition that was placed in a North Coast Area Plan to study subterranean intakes to avoid potential impacts to marine environment was put in there at the insistence of the Coastal Commission. So that happened about 5 years ago as part of the Cambrian San Simeon Acres Community Plan update, and that was revised several times through its public review process and finally became part of the current North Coast Area Plan. So if you wind the tape out 5 more years after that point, we've got a unanimous no decision against collecting the data to determine that feasibility. So in my engineering mind, I'm not very political, but there's a logical disconnect there somewhere that I don't have my arms wrapped around. But nevertheless, the Corps is rethinking its approach now as far as alternatives to consider. We had hoped that that data could be gathered to see if there was a way to have a subterranean intake without disturbing the ocean floor, without disturbing the beach, possibly drilled directionally from the Shamel Park area into a, paleo channel. It's approximately 150 feet deep. There was a lot of confusion, I believe, over the fact that they thought the facilities might actually be where the data was being collected, but that wasn't the case. That was where the channel happened to go out to sea at that point, where you could actually get the lithology without having to be in the marine environment to get the data. So it was the simplest, least and potentially environmentally impacting approaches for collecting the data. There were some comments made that, oh, yes, you have a you're saying you're going to do, develop these alternatives, yet you have a contract, the Army Corps has a contract with you to do a desal facility. And that is the case, but, such contracts can be amended in the future if they come up with a different recommendation as part of that EIR, EIS process. But at that point, I could tell it was going down to tubes as far as the vote. So, the commissioners had quite a few ex partes with sort of activist organizations that were opposed to desal, it just was not a favorable setting by any stretch of the imagination. Because it was an Army Corps project, my comments were getting together on their end to say, okay, what other alternatives now that can we look at? The one alternative that we already have designed is off of the flag lot that the CCSD owns, and that has a screened intake on the ocean floor with an outfall diffuser type for the concentrated return. That was permitted back in the 90s. The area has been redesignated as a state marine park now, so we're not sure about how well that would be accepted today, so we have to have more discussions with the Coastal Commission and other key organizations to see whether that could even be considered. I know Redondo Beach, for example, is doing a lot of research on that particular area as far as how you can use a screened intake to make sure you're not, causing issues with the marine environment. So we'll no doubt be in touch with them to get more data out of that organization as well. So that's the gist of what's happened in the last couple of days. I would be glad to respond to any questions you might have at this point. But
I just have one question, a clarification. Did the Coastal Commission suggest to you to look at that site, or was that part of the alternatives, look at alternatives?
Well, we started off looking at the San Simeon Beach.
Did the Coastal Commission suggest to you that you would look at that again, or is it you looking at alternatives? In other words, was it their suggestion?
It's a bit of both. Let me clarify that more instead of confusing things. But back in 2006, we were in the middle of trying to do a similar exploration of San Simeon Beach. At that point, there were habitat concerns related to nesting snowy plovers at that site, some other issues of concern related to that. That was denied as far as going forward through an appeal process. At one of the hearings in that process, which I believe occurred late 2006 or 2007, several of the commissioners then said, well, it's not that we're against this project. We really like you to find a different spot. So that's when we looked at Channel Park Beach in 2008 and found, there are paleo channels out here. We better explore them. And you're limited to where they exist, and they typically exist at the mouths of creeks or rivers that it's in the currents that are predominant here cause that type of direction to occur over geologic time. So that's where we're at. I hope that explains the history of it and why we were doing that.
Director?
Well, I can't see
you. No.
Yes, I think that since we're on the subject, we probably have a lot to blame ourselves, because if people are having ex parte meetings with the Coastal Commission, I believe we should be doing the same. We're an activist organization also, and we should have. I'm just suggesting to the president, the new president, that one of our goals is to make sure that we have a good relationship with the Coastal Commission and be able to counter and, or at least express our opinions personally to the Coastal Commission members so that at the last minute it's not 3 minutes worth of discussion, or it's not something where there's five or six people that continuously get ex parte meetings with the Coastal Commission. We should do the same. I would suggest that Jerry and this board and maybe even Bob, you know, become more active so that things slide through the Coastal Commission more in keeping with what we desire.
Good point. Director Cliff?
Yes, I wanted to ask Bob, is there a plan now? I mean, I read some of the statements of the Army Corps of Engineers in the newspaper. But is there a plan now to have some kind of a meeting or workshop to discuss these alternatives somewhere, maybe in January or February, so that we don't, so that, that there's a general input into what are they planning to do, what are, can we participate in or not participate in, or at least some kind of a community discussion. I got the opinion that in the newspaper article that there would be some kind of a public discussion of what alternatives are out there relative to diesel. And I just wondered, is there, if there isn't, I would like to see us have some kind of a sit down with the board and the public and
at what was in the 2008, you know, Water Master Plan Program EIR, which had several alternatives referenced in it. But they may even go beyond that in some of their alternatives. So you can have a workshop setting just specific on that. The other process that they're required to follow by NEPA is have a public scoping session on the EIR, or EIS, I should say, EIS/EIR. So that is built into the actual National Environmental Policy Act that requires them to have a public scoping session, and they are in the process of planning that right now. I don't have the timing of that yet, but that is another way to have that discussion as well. So if you prefer a workshop over the scoping session, we can look at it both ways.
Well, my concern is that it's an open discussion and forum of everybody discussing what alternatives are available, not just a this is what we plan to do type of a sometimes scoping sessions don't give you as many freedom to discuss all alternatives. And they seem to be kind of directed, whereas I guess I'm looking for more of a just a wide open. Why can't we do this? Why can't we do that? Why, rather than this one's no longer, so we're going to go here.
Well, I certainly think we can do that. I can check with the Corps staff and then probably get back to you on at the next board meeting. Maybe we can have some more details and maybe check on schedules.
I don't think
so
it has
forth.
To be immediate. I think we've got, you know, next quarter or something like that to you know, do something.
May I, President Clift? I think it would be a good opportunity with the new president, the new vice president, and a prospective new board member to have that broad conversation. I think I hear what Board Member Cliff saying with regard to not only specifically what's happened at the Coastal Commission level, but involve the conversation on a larger scale, and just, you know, we haven't really had the opportunity to do that, and I think it's a good point. We have a desal report every month, and it's limited, and our conversation is limited, but to, you know, to have a public forum meeting and roll up our sleeves and for 4 hours or so and invite the public and I
would agree also with Director Berenger's comments that somewhere along the way we need more than 3 minutes of dialogue to present our case. And what I was pointing towards was the fact I thought that the Coastal Commission, instead of just criticizing, was doing constructive criticism in the sense that they were saying, explore the San Simeon situation, the present installation up there. But somewhere along the way, in the last whatever it is, 16 years of looking at this project, we have to bring it to a head one way or another. And all we were asking for, of course, was a piece of data. It wasn't saying we're going to build a desal unit. It was saying this is one of the more, or this is the best location for an intake to be sited, and yet we're stymied by not one, but many agencies, including the Coastal Commission. And we do need to have a dialogue that's more involved with that organization. And I agree with Director Cliff that we do have to look at the alternatives and say which way should we go, and to explore the way we are going now. It just seems like it's a thing in engineering, Coriolis acceleration, where the faster we go, the further we go down the tubes, and it's expensive. And I think we have to do these measures in order to bring it to a head one way or another. So maybe next session, but sooner the better. We've got to accomplish a go or no go on this project. It is the elephant in the room, and here's an example of it. So any other board comments?
No, I was just going to suggest that next month we're going to be discussing the Urban Water Master Plan, and finally we're going to have Chapter 6 involved. I would think it would be reasonable, especially if it's on the agenda, for us to explore, at least among ourselves, those ideas that we have. I don't think we have to wait until the first quarter's over. I think we should deal with the subject, at least an open discussion on the subject, next meeting.
Yeah, the only thing I could add is you're absolutely right. There'll be a wide range of alternatives to look at, and we need to make a decision at some point. And that's going to be part of the NEPA process. That, you know, it's not just going to be alternatives on desals. All the alternatives are out, approach. We had several different alternatives lined out in that old report. So if anyone needs direction on how to get to that site, we can certainly provide that. But it is posted on our CambriaCSD.org website.
Thank you. Any other? No. We have a number of requests to speak. First one, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen, a resident of Cambria for about a decade or so. I was again intrigued listening to your discussion, and before I read what I thought I'd read, I want to say that when I watched the commission's live meeting on my little laptop, a little compact, a little cheapy, I did get all the pictures and all the words, and I thought there was a very intriguing discussion among the commissioners about the confusion of authority and responsibility between the Army Corps of Engineers and the Cambria Community Services District. You can imagine that I was quite ready to hear that, because I've been saying that for years to you. I think it is in your best interest, however you want to do it, as ex parte for the next meeting, taking them out for lunch. I don't know how you do it, but I would get some clarity on what the responsibility of CCSD is at this point on this program. This project. I don't think Army Corps of Engineers thinks we have anything to do here in the community until after they're done with this particular project for $2.5 million. That's speculation on my part. Please figure out and let us, as the community ratepayers, know what, pardon my language, in the hell are we paying for? I used to teach theology. Now, I want to read one paragraph of my letter I certainly wrote to the Coastal Commission before their meeting. I won't read you the whole thing. I don't have time. I want you to read one paragraph. I said to them, my fifth point to them, I certainly support scientific research in general. I can't tell you how I wish I had been a scientist instead of a theologian. But I did my thing back then. However, the merits of each proposed project must be evaluated not only with the criteria of specific disciplines of engineers, the geologically distinctive Cambria Slab, the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, the Cambria State Marine Park, Shamel Park Beach and Park, and Hearst San Simeon State Park and Santa Rosa Creek Natural Preserve. When all such sites are involved, intrusive testing should be precluded from the outset. It shouldn't even come up as a question, friends. We've worked too hard on environmental issues now for decades to think we can just go blithely in and drill the hell out of someplace under the guise of pseudoscience. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? Elizabeth? From what you're indicating is that the ethics of the ecology and things override the scientific knowledge at this area on all areas along the beach. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that in the areas that are included in all those democratically decided protected areas, we've already made a social policy decision.
Okay.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. Right. You can't override a previous democratic decision just under the guise of calling it science.
Okay. And so I just wanted to make sure and be clear. You would then oppose any types of drillings in those kinds of areas, any kind of disruption. Let's not say drillings. Let's say disruptions.
No, I think the disruption of a sandcastle on that beach is fantastic.
No. Mechanical.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it would have to be. I don't know if the Muslims defined according to Newt Gingrich came ashore, that might constitute a problem. But I would want to look at the specifics. I'm not going to make a universal judgment because I'm not God, but I am an ethicist, and I care deeply about science and the environment.
I understand that. I wanted to make sure I understood your position.
Yeah, I'd be happy to engage in it again in a conversation in a big public meeting, as you often say we ought to have.
Okay.
I'd love it. Thanks.
Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President McKinnon. I'd just like to.
I just want to. Yeah. You're indicating that you would not necessarily oppose some of the other alternatives that appeared in the Water Master Plan.
No, I would not.
Okay, that's what I want to.
That's a double negative. I would not oppose.
Okay.
So I would support. Yes.
Amanda, is there anyone that you would favor?
What?
Is there anyone that you would favor having reviewed those alternatives?
It's hard to say because if you're going to rescore the numbers for desal, you'd have to look at the other alternatives too and see if any of their numbers had changed. I think the decision-making matrix was a good idea, but it was flawed in the way that the decision was made about what scores each thing was given. Okay. So I would hesitate right this moment to say. Mm-hmm. I think there's enough water.
Okay. Thank you. Tina Dickinson.
Tina Dickinson, Cambria. I have to disagree, Mr. Greshens, with your comment or statement on a logical disconnect with the commissioners. I would have to say that what happened this time was a logical connection with the commissioners to this project. They finally got it. The point being that the site itself is not a feasible site. And I go back, I'm going to read for a couple to educate the directors today, and I have 6 minutes because
Catherine Reinheit. So from the commissioner's comments last Friday, Commissioner Bokcho said, and I quote, "There's just no way around this site, this beach, this creek mouth is an environmentally sensitive area by any standard in my mind. There isn't a section of Chapter 3 this doesn't go against." And to add to that, in my distress about this, is that most of the conditions you tried to incorporate to protect this place, they've taken it out. And then Commissioner Zimmer said, and I'm quoting here, Commissioner Zimmer, who seconded the motion to deny a consistency determination for the project, says, among other things, and here I quote, "There was a permit application for a coastal development permit from the CCSD district in 2006. This commission denied the CDP. They did not approve it. They denied it. Subsequent to that, a contract was entered, coupled with the most uncertainty of overcoming obstacles. Fundamentally, this area appears too crammed for a full-size desal facility." That's the Shamel Park area. And so you have to say to yourselves, like we've been for years saying, why don't we look at the other two components, conservation and recycling? Those have never been looked at. It's been tunnel vision desal, and we find ourselves now with, we've said no to the lobbyist for a new contract, we're not getting money from the feds, and truly, as you look at this, directors, this is serious. The feds got $3 million. That's all they're doing, is spinning away at the $3 million, spending it. And knowing full well that that site is not a feasible site, it will never be approved. And so you guys are spinning your wheels. And all you have to do, Mr. Director Barringer, is if you want to make an ex parte communication with the commissioners, all you have to do is call. It doesn't take more than that. And I, you know, you've got to learn the rules of the games of the game, because it's highly possible you can get in touch with them. And thank you for allowing me the 6 minutes.
Tina? So even though you oppose the desal situation, you would favor, if we were to develop a recycling program that added water to the community, you would support that?
I would want to know what exactly you meant by which recycling program. I'm certainly for conservation. I'm certainly for recycling. But I think we need to be more transparent about exactly what you're talking about. So, I mean, I need to know exactly.
Well, I understand that, but you generally would be favorable to a program of conservation or recycling.
Absolutely.
That would add water to the community.
Yes, but okay. Remember, two things. We're down 203 from the 2000 census, and we're only using half of the allocated amount that we're allowed from both creeks.
Okay.
So we've got to keep that in mind. I think some rules need to be changed. Some policy needs to be changed here.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Next, Jim Webb.
I've been told to take my sunglasses off.
That's
sorry
okay.
About that. About the facility being located on the beach where testing was proposed to occur. I attended that meeting and have had an opportunity to review a video of it, and I guess I just don't understand where that perception comes from. I think there is no indication that they believe the desal plant was going to be put at the mouth of the creek, and I never heard anybody express that. I will comment, though, that that type of argument was advanced back in 2007 when the board was denied again for drilling at the mouth of San Simeon Creek. The CCSD appealed that particular ruling, and the argument that they made was that the Coastal Commission had been confused and believed that the desal plant was, in their mind, they thought the desal plant was going to be on the beach there, and of course that wasn't what was being proposed. That appeal was lost by the CCSD. Secondly, I'd just like to say that I concur with the opinion that the Coastal Commission recommended subterranean intakes as a preferred alternative when it came to impingement and entrainment of sea life. What the Coastal Commission did not recommend is that the only interpretation of placement for a subterranean intake would be at the mouth of a creek. And while I understand there are advantages, in particular the large size of gravel that might be deposited in a paleo channel, I don't see anywhere in the Commission's words or recommendations that would lead you to believe the only acceptable site along our coast has to be at the mouth of an active steelhead creek. And then finally, I listened very carefully to the question that President McKinnon asked of who decided to go to Santa Rosa Creek. Who made that decision? And unless, if my hearing's not that great, so maybe I didn't catch it, but I don't think it was the Coastal Commission who decided it. I heard Engineer Greshens mention a technical.
I'm listening to that there's still confusion over where the subterranean facilities would be possibly shown in alternatives. And that's what my comment was related to. It wasn't related to anything doing with an above-grade plant. We all know that would not be on, obviously, on a beach. The confusion is how that channel would leave out into the ocean. It's 150 feet deep at that point on the beach. It's a couple hundred feet wide. It's going to meander on its way out and out to sea. If you look at bathymetry maps up and down the coast of California, particularly Northern California, quite a few of those channels trend in a southwesterly direction as they go out to sea. They don't end at the beach. The research that the geophysicist had done on drilling technologies and so forth that would not disturb the seafloor, a lot of this has been pioneered in Holland and places like that. You can go 1,600 feet, roughly. So if that channel does indeed go southwesterly out to sea, they could place the screens in that channel so far away from that beach it would have no impact on the lagoon. So that's part of the data gathering that we're trying to get to determine, you know, how to define alternatives in a subsequent EIR, EIS effort. We all knew that the channel, the lagoon, is a very sensitive area to avoid impacts with any type of alternative that you come up with. But the direction of that channel, what it consists of, the best access point was right there at that beach before it goes into the ocean environment. So, again, it was just a data collection effort just for that point. There was no intention to put wells right at that point where the data was collected. And again, there was still, in my mind, a lot of confusion on that point. You know, it's kind of interesting. You mentioned the Coriolis effect. That's actually what helps shape the direction of that channel as it goes offshore. You know, we have our high pressures go clockwise. They get off the coast of California in the summer. They drive the predominant winds, you know, kind of from the northwest. That takes the currents from north to a south direction predominantly. And you have that over geologic time that's going to tend to cause those channels to go southwesterly as they leave the ocean. You couple that with the continental drift that it goes in a northerly direction over time.
So who was it, the Coastal Commission that suggested subterranean intake that then a team was formed, or was it on our own?
The Coastal Commission.
I'm saying the CCSD or
certain.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, the Coastal Commission inserted the community-wide conditions into the North Coast Area Plan, one in which said, if you're going to look at desal, look at subterranean-type approaches. Okay. So that was the condition. We agreed with that condition. We thought, yes, it would avoid impacts. So that's what started our quest to really look at that in detail. When the San Simeon site was turned down, we did it on our own initiative to say, okay, is there
is there a channel somewhere else in response to some of those commissioner comments back in 2007? And that's
okay. Okay. Jim. Thank you. Last, but oh no, we have two. Mary Webb. And after that, Mahalia Burton. One more. Oh, two more.
Mary Webb, Cambria, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I also went to the Coastal Commission meeting on Friday, and the Coastal Commissioners are not confused. They don't have a disconnect. They totally connected. They connected the dots. They connected geotech drilling with desalination. They connected the fact that there had been an end run, trying to do an end run around CEQA, an end run around environmental review, and they unanimously said no. There was no lack of information. There is 20 years of dialogue between the CCSD and these agencies. There's no lack of information. There's 20 years of information. Google it. We've been trying to do desalination since 1993. There's plenty of data in there. Agency letters, citizen letters, Coastal Commission decisions. There's a history of denial. This was the worst possible site. We've been saying it for at least 6 years. The Coastal Commission has, they have guidelines for desalination. One of the first guidelines for desalination is that it should be the last resort of a water project. Last on the list. That's or not, that's ridiculous. Sure, if we're going to do desal, then they say you should have subterranean intakes. But desal is supposed to be the last resort. That's what it says in the county LCP, too. It's the last resort, not the first. I am very encouraged that you're asking people questions. You're looking for dialogue. Maybe we'll have a workshop. Let's get a citizens committee. I volunteer. I would love to be on it. I'll represent citizens or green space or whatever, but we have a lot of different alternatives. We can do tertiary treatment. We can do recycling. We can even build a little bit. But we need the data first. We need to know how much water we have, how much water we're using, right? How much commercial is using, how much residential is using, where we can save, how much we can conserve, and then what we can do about building. Very encouraged. Thank you, General Manager Gruber. I'm so glad we have a new general manager. The Coastal Commission is not confused about water alternatives either. They know this project was desalination. We're not talking about water alternatives at the Coastal Commission. We are talking about desalination. They never said they supported Cambria's desalination project. I totally encourage you to go to the Coastal Commission website, hear it for yourself. Hear what they had to say for yourself. I'm very sorry and really upset to hear Mr. Gressens once again mischaracterizing what happened at the Coastal Commission, and I hope you will actually call him on it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary, let me and I understand that your position is that desal is the last resort.
Yes.
Okay. By that statement, does that mean that if we could find an alternative that was environmentally sound, less expensive,
sure.
Would you support that?
Yes, I would. Let's let's get the list. Like Amanda said, let's get the evaluation matrix, plug in the new numbers. Desalination is last on that list, too, because it's the most expensive. It's the hardest environmentally to get past. It's got all these. It's just the last on the list.
Okay.
And it should have been. That's why Coastal Commission says that it should be the last resort, because it takes more energy. It's more.
Have you ever, has anybody sitting up there, directors, have you ever read any of the documents? Because I've mm-hmm. read them, and all the mm-hmm. answers are there. Mm-hmm. And I'll address this to Director Behringer. Your lobbyist said he was going to lobby his good friend, Coastal Commissioner Brennan. Well, didn't he do that? Because he could have. It's very, very easy to call up a coastal commissioner and just talk to them, just like many people do all the time. Now, the Coastal Act is the most brilliant piece of environmental legislation ever written. States, people all over the country are so envious of it. Chapter 3 are the policies that apply to most of the acts that projects have to comply with to get a permit. When the commissioners analyzed this project, they didn't do it emotionally. They didn't do it inaccurately. They took the policies of the Coastal Act and they looked at this project, they read the material, and they applied it. They did that in 2007. It was a unanimous hearing on a rehearing. And at the very end, feeling sorry, and this is my opinion because I was there for Tammy Reddick, Art Mantandon, and I think that our engineer, Bob Greshens, was there. Commissioner Blanc said, can't you find another site? He didn't mean to go back to Santa Rosa. In 1993, in the constraints analysis, when desal was first thought of, there's a whole report, I have it. It said, don't go to Santa Rosa Creek. We even have a former CCSD director here now. He said that a few months ago. So what does Bob Greshens do? He gets that constraints analysis, and his fingerprints are on it digitally, because I have that same report, and I can see where he's highlighted because his name comes up. He's left his fingerprints on it. He reads that constraints analysis, but he doesn't heed it. He goes, ooh, light bulb. I'm going to go back to where in 1993 they said not to. So he goes back there, and he's wasted all this time and money for a site that doesn't work. And that's why desal that was permitted by the Coastal Commission in 1996 ended up on a little bluff, not on a sensitive coastal creek. And that's what was permitted. I have the information. Jim Webb wrote the most brilliant analysis in his...
Ms. Burton, just a question for you to follow up. Any supplemental water other than desal is okay with you, right?
I do my homework.
Uh-huh.
One of the directors sitting in the audience said, oh, these people that haven't lived here for a long time, they don't do anything. I read the documents, and I do my homework. I called up the engineer in San Luis a few years ago when the Nacimiento pipeline was no longer a pipe dream, Gary Henderson, and I talked to him at length about what we could get. And he told me, he said, the exchange would allow us 600 acre feet a year from whale rock maximum because of their safe yield. I like the idea of whale rock.
You like whale rock?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It just...
So you're open to other alternatives.
Well, I'm not
it's
a no-growther.
It's just desal is...
I've never been a no-growther.
A red light blinking.
That's just some moniker that people
hang
on.
Well, it's just interesting. You've spoken many times, and it's good to know where you're coming from. And
right.
I think it's
And there is a treatment plant in Cayucas where the water from Cayucas would be treated. It's a little bitty 8-inch pipe. It's all in the water master plan along the Caltrans... right away it would be a lot more easily permittable.
Just a final point. I don't want to belabor anymore, but there's a report that was written by someone in Southern California that said it would be less expensive to create a desalinization plant in Los Angeles that's energy, time, money, than the pipeline that comes from Northern California that supplies them the extra water that they need. So there's all sorts of analysis, all sorts of data. What we want to do, and I think the board wants to do, is to make a decision of the direction, the vector we should go, that will protect the future of Cambria.
You're never going to get permitted.
And we will try to do that. And it's important that almost the sixth board member, which is the public that attends so many of these meetings, that we understand where you're coming from, and we understand and we listen. And I think what you're hearing is we have an open mind, and
today
we want to move
do.
Forward.
Today so you have an open mind, but all the years before...
That's the past. It's like a stock. It's over. We're only looking
unanimous?
To the future. So let's move forward.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And one last question. Does the 10,000.3 $1 million authorization, of which we've spent about six, count toward any water
that would since the last desal project was terminated, that you've given up on this project. Mm-hmm. Now, if we look back, Cindy Hawley came up and told the board a while ago that, loosely paraphrasing, that you guys were sort of hiding behind the Army Corps to get this project done. Now, when you go to the Coastal Commission, they only give you 3 minutes. Well, why is that? You're not the lead agency. If you were the lead agency, you'd have the necessary time to present your case. And DSAL was the last project. That's the reason that it was considered back in 93. That's the reason it must be considered in 2012. However, I told the board, as mentioned by the last speaker, numerous times that you were in the wrong spot. We knew back in 93 that the state agencies, the environmentalists, which are very strong, very outspoken in this community, would never, ever let you do anything in that protected area. There was no confusion, as they state, at the Coastal Commission. They just flat don't want you in that protected area. The CCSD spent $400,000 to $450,000 to buy that flag lot in the early 90s, and the reason was is because we could not do a project at the mouth of Santa Rosa or the mouth of San Simeon Creek. So, alternatives, I'd love it if you guys asked me what my alternative might be. DSAL was considered last after every single alternative that's going to be given to you was considered. And I'll tell you this, if you switch and go to another project, it's a moving target. Any project is better than the one you're now considering. And as soon as you consider the new project, it is going to become the new target. People are going to tell you Lake Nacimiento pumped the water over. First of all, the head pressures to get the water up and over that hill are more than what pressurized desal is going to be. When you bring that water over with mercury in it and you dump it in a protected stream, that being San Simeon, you're introducing mercury into a protected habitat. For you to get a, and I'll wrap up on this, for you to get a reclamation project, where's the water that you are going to recycle? There isn't enough unless you go to the mouth of San Simeon and you start dewatering the mouth there to extract that water, run it through the RO system that you're still going to have to build, and then you're opening up Pandora's box for saltwater intrusion. So I would forget about your current area at San Rosa Creek. Our new general manager, get him active, get him involved, talking to the Coastal Commission, find out what they will allow you to do in regards to a desal project, and if it's working on our flag lot that we've already bought, go out there. But if it's now become a marine protected area, sanctuary, well, then you've got no project, and we've wasted 15 years, and I don't think you need to ride the coattails of the Army Corps. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving right along, where are we? General Manager, you want to finish your report? Are you okay with that?
Would you like me to finish my report?
Yes.
I'll be more than happy to, and I'll make this brief. Page six is my General Manager's report. The very first thing at the top of that report is support the 2000 goals adopted by the Board of Directors. What I indicated in an email to the Board a couple days ago was that at January's meeting, I'm going to summarize that for you and kind of bring you up to date on where we are with some of these goals and objectives. Of course, that'll be a Board decision on whether you want to continue on with those. There's some of them that I'd like to finish. As Director Berenger indicated earlier, we have completed several of them, and that was with the goals and adopted by the board. So I want to just encapsulate those and just let you know where we are in some of those processes, especially because they involve ad hoc committees. And I'm not going to go through all these, but going down to a couple bullet points, I was asked by a director the other day to continue to meet with staff weekly regarding CSD conservation measures. I've heard quite a bit of dialogue about conservation, and we know how important it is in the community. I did send a summary to the board yesterday with regard to what we are doing on conservation, but I think it's important, again, to add that to the agenda packet. And so there'll be another addendum piling all the information in a master fee schedule form. We'll convene the ad hoc committee, but I think it's really important to solicit community input, and I think that's the direction the board wants to go. So on the master fee schedule, we'll have a workshop, and before I ask the board to adopt that master fee schedule, it'll have a component of community input to it. You'll see down here working with district council staff regarding a draft of a special projects application and an agreement. Just really quickly on that, I'd like to bring that to the board in January. We do spend a lot of time at staff level with individuals that have proposed projects, and I would like to be able to provide a mechanism in which to recoup some of the costs associated with staff time and legal time in reviewing those proposed projects, especially if we bring them before we bring them to the board for consideration. So it's a mechanism, and I've worked with David on this, to be able to recoup some of those costs. SCADA, David's been working with me. There is an RFP process. We originally thought that we could just circulate a document that was originally generated by Rockwell, and that's really not the case. So there's some guidelines that we need to follow on that, and we'll be moving forward on that also. We're trying to work on scheduling a combined workshop right now with the boards for the CCSD and the healthcare district, and that would be a combined workshop on evaluating the pros and cons of a possible shared services in the future. Going to page 8, there's the finance manager's report. We did not have any expenditures over $100,000 in November. Our LAIF balance in the local agency investment fund as of November 30th, 2011 is $3,768 and $768,519, excuse me. That's on page 8. Internal loans is on page 9. Page 10, if you go to page 10, it shows again, and I always touch on this. It's because of our long-term debts. This really plays into some of the things that we want to do in the future relating to capital improvement projects and when those. Chief Miller is not here today, so page 12, we responded. The fire department, Cambria Community Services Fire Department, responded to 73 calls. It was a pretty crazy 24, 48 hours, I think, for everybody. The fire department responded over 25 calls in a 24-hour period relating to the wind. The encouraging part is it was a really good exercise for all the departments, water, wastewater, and the fire department, and facilities and resources. And I just want to compliment everybody publicly. They did a really, really good job on that. And I was available 24 hours a day through the whole thing, and the staff pretty much worked 24 hours a day. So on page 12, the fire department responded to 73 calls. 48 of those were medical. 4 were traffic-related, vehicle-related. 4 were hazardous situations. 9 were public service assist. 6 were false alarms, and one rescue and one fire incident, for a total of 73 calls. So they were extremely busy. There are the district engineer report, I'll leave that for last, and I'll let Bobbitt comment on some of the projects that he's working on page 13. Page 14 is the water supervisor's report. He is still here? Is he still here? Is Jim still here? If you have any questions, the wells are still doing very, very good at this time of year, above average. The water department responded to 100, 42 calls, and that there's a detailed spreadsheet on the next page, on page 15, that shows the amount of calls that a relatively small department responds to. We did evaluate the tanks. Cathodic protection is a really important program. That's a process that keeps the corrosive material in the water from attacking the tanks. It attacks anoids or cathodes, if you would, and so we're in the process of making sure that all our tanks are properly cathodic protection, they're protected. The rodeo grounds, we did a pump efficiency test on that, and we determined that one of the pumps were good, but the other two pumps were not. And that means we're spending a lot of money on electrical costs that hopefully when we get that new project built, that will take care of itself. We replaced a meter at the middle school, and we plan on doing one at the high school. That's going to be a little bit bigger project than we anticipated. The reason we replaced the meter at the middle school is it was 20 years old, identifying some of these, and what we're hoping the result of that will be more revenue for the district and some of these older meters. We did a major repair on a generator during the windstorm up at the San Simeon well field. Again, a total of 142 calls from the water department this last month. On page 20 is the wastewater report done by Mike Finnegan. As you can see, again, we're spending, and later on in the agenda, there's a request, or it's already been approved, the consent calendar, to purchase a new generator, which is really important. So the theme of these departments is ongoing maintenance. Making sure that we're making critical repairs to our departments, to the wastewater system, to the water department, to the facilities. That's being accomplished by the monies that were allocated by this board with this year's budget. I'm not coming back to the board. I'm saying, hey, I need more money to do these things. So the staff is doing a really, really good job. And just a couple key ones under wastewater. We replaced a pump at lift station 1A. Replaced a panel transformer at lift station 1A. The list just goes on and on. These are major, major jobs that the guys are doing out there that continue to really appreciate. The SSMP phase 2 and 3, I'm meeting with a consultant next Wednesday and to see if they're interested in doing that project for us. We originally budgeted $30,000 as part of this year's budget for the SSMP phase 2 and 3, which is a sanitary management program, sanitary sewer maintenance program. I believe we can get it done considerably less than that, and then we can take the savings from that and spend it somewhere else in the wastewater department. And we continue to evaluate the very last item on page 20, number 14, we continue to evaluate the manholes. That was an additional goal and objective that was added to the goals by the board, and I've asked Mike to elaborate a little bit more on this next month and specifically indicate how many manholes. I believe it's over 500 that we physically inspected and have shot the elevations on and done repairs to. So we're well over halfway. Page 21 is the Facilities and Resource Manager report. Carlos is doing a really good job in that department. It's, again, the Fiscalini Ranch, the Moonstone Connect. Jerry McKinnon, so that's going to be money that we can put back in. I would like to be able to see that number significantly rise so we continue to make improvements. Windstorms, the day after the windstorm, Carlos was out there and cleared 25 trees on the upper trail. He did a really, really good job on that. We had the administrative office report, and it shows some of the things that Monique and her staff is working on. I'll answer any questions that I can answer right now on all these reports. I know it's a lot of information. I throw at the board, but it's important that the board and the community know that we're being proactive in a lot of the things we're doing. We seem to be taking on more, and I don't mind that as long as we can, you know, accomplish our basic mission.
Director Barringer.
Yes, I have a couple of quick things. One is on page six, actually. I see that you're thinking about replacing MOMS, the software, and I understand, I kind of know that business a little bit.
And my suggestion is you get started on that project early in the year, because it would be ideal, I think the finance manager would say, to have a new system in place by the next fiscal year. So it's probably going to be a pretty long project, four months at least, I think, to convert data, et cetera. So I think I recommend that you look into that early rather than trying to start it at the next fiscal year. And I commend you on the fact of having more bookings in the Vets Hall, and I think we could have a tremendously improved amount of bookings. One way of getting the word out, of course, is in any business, is through the Internet or through a third party. So I recommend that if it makes sense for someone to be involved as a booking agent, so to speak, mm-hmm. and at least start a website presence, I think we could get a lot of bookings for the Vets Hall.
I think the concept of a booking agent or a third-party administrator is a good idea for several reasons, and I think that's something that we'll continue to discuss at the ad hoc level committee, and ultimately, if that's the recommendation of the committee to the board, that may be a direction in which we want to go. And I'm really encouraged to hear that you support, at least one board member supports getting rid of MOMS. It's a DOS-based system, and the transition will be difficult, but the end result will be really good. What I'm hoping, whatever we decide,
we still have Bob.
We still have Bob's report.
Okay, I'll go try to be brief here. Other projects working on Stewart Street and Rodeo Grounds Pump Station project, Stewart Street Tank, I should say, and Rodeo Grounds Pump Station. We'll be starting the design support for the coastal development permitting process on both of those sometime in January at this point. Urban Water Management Plan update. Again, I have a brief PowerPoint. We're asking that it be continued. We just didn't hit the target of today. Still gathering some critical data, and I'll give a little explanation on that later on in the meeting. Updates to water conservation retrofit program that involves going through the district code, as well as a lot of discussions and meetings with staff as far as improving the record keeping and the rebate retrofit program. There's some definite, some positive developments in that area with the California Green Building Code that came out for 2010, and I'll talk a little bit about that under the Urban Water Management Plan as well, but there are some opportunities to expand on the conservation program. And then capital project budget planning assistance. I've been having a series of meetings with both Mike Finnegan and Jim Adams on the wastewater and water department needs, and developing that into a database so that we have all the projects clearly identified, the justification for the projects and the estimated costs, so we can do some modeling on rates and so forth, and projecting those forward in the future. So that pretty much concludes my report, and I'd be glad to answer any questions if you had them.
Comments? We have one request to speak on this issue. Mary Webb.
Yes, I'd like to, Mary Webb, I'd like to just say that I did have the opportunity to meet with Courtney Updegrove and Kathy Choate at the CCSD office, and they were very helpful and really professional, and it was just another really great experience. Also, that they kind of explained to me that the MOM software program does not really work for them. They cannot pull the data out, in a really good way, and it's really needed to have a new software program. And so just as a member of the public, I want to make sure that we also support the staff in being able to get the kind of pump station showed a floodplain that was incorrect. And I wonder if General Manager can say if that map has been corrected in the new Rodeo Grounds report.
Bob, did we look after that meeting? We were going to look into that. Did we ever follow up on that, or did we?
We haven't restarted RBF yet, but that's something to definitely be looking at. Make sure that's correct.
We will, and I'll have an answer for you. We'll get an answer for you. Okay.
Okay.
I'll make a note to myself.
Thank you. And then finally, also, just appreciation again for the general manager really taking care of infrastructure needs and having these really great reports that we can see every month exactly what of what's happening with all of the pipes and the pumping and all the water services that we all depend on. So thank you.
Good. Thank you. I don't know if anyone really knows what DOS is. Very few people would know that. 1970s, probably a young guy wouldn't even. Yeah, there's one. Okay. Yeah. Time for a change, I would say. Yes, Director.
I would also like to say that if you change from the MOMS, the key thing is for us to be able to retrieve data on an almost instantaneous basis. The problem now is, you know, you just can't get information except on an annual kind of a thing. And it just seems to me that computer systems, the purpose of it is to be able to set Wednesday through Thursday and give me the data or any date. And that is a lot more important to me than the price. Because we can buy something that doesn't do what we want to do and be cheap and be in trouble. So data retrieval.
you're cut off. You got to go both ways.
data retrieval ability, whether it's for monetary or for billing deals and all, has got to be the primary source.
Agreed.
Can I add to that a little bit? Back in the days of DOS, I used to sell systems to communities. So I know they can be very expensive because communities have different requirements. You also have different requirements. You have to have certain data protection. You have to protect the information that can be instantly gotten on somebody. But the freedom, you know, or privacy is important to each individual customer. So even though you get it instantly, some can't be shared.
Add one other thing from having a company that had software. It's a quagmire, so walk very slowly and very carefully. And I agree with Director Barringer. On 6C, member and committee reports? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a comment on the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission that was scheduled for Tuesday was postponed because of the illness of the chair and the lack of a quorum, and so that meeting will be reset for February 7th, and I assume that the agenda items that were scheduled for that date will be carried forward. Also, one note on the procedures for the facilities that have been under discussion. It's my understanding that when the public workshop, public hearing will be set for the fee schedule, that will also consider a number of the policies that have come up with respect to use of the facilities. Now we'll consider them at the same time and get input from the public on those policies.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Dr. Cliff?
On the lot transfer committee has met on two occasions. In their last meeting, they took a look at the lots to be transferred and cost-benefit aspects of it, and voted to recommend to this board that we do not accept those lots at the present time, but still maybe think about it in the future, and that'll come back, I think, to the board at the next meeting for discussion.
Director Barringer?
The NCAC was dark this month, so there was no meeting.
Okay. Moving on then to the consent agenda, we had one item that was pulled. Item E, consider adoption of Resolution 69-2011, approving Memorandum of Understanding for California Office of Traffic Safety. Director Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask that this be pulled because having spent many years in the field of public safety and working with federal and state agencies on these types of proposals, I wanted to extend congratulations to Chief Miller and in his absence through the General Manager on developing a multi-jurisdictional proposal which will involve the purchase of auto extrication and rescue equipment for again, if you would extend that to him, Jerry, I'd appreciate that.
I most certainly will.
With that, I would move acceptance of the consent agenda.
I'll second it.
All in favor? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We had one comment from Jerry McKinnon.
Thank you. I guess I'm slipping into my second childhood, because all of this discussion today reminded me of a nursery rhyme that my mother gave to me one time that made a profound effect on my head. All around the mulberry bush, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey stopped to scratch his head. Goes the weasel. A penny for a spool of thread, a penny for a needle. That's the way the money goes. Goes the weasel. She said, Jerry, I'm sorry, we can't buy that toy. We have other important things to spend the money on. And that lived with me all through those depression days when I was a kid. So I guess that's why I'm such a tightwad today. Looking at the expenditures for the month of November, I see a total of $23,540.40 charged to facilities and resources. Of that $23,540.40, $13,000, the way I read it, went against the ranch land. $6,360 was to pay for temporary staffing because we lost two employees in that particular department. And for the vets hall, $4,104.30. That's 55% of that $23,000 went to the ranch, 17% to the vets hall, and 27% for temporary staffing. Now, when I look at the things that are spent on the ranch land, I see that $1,300 was to haul away the eucalyptus. Well, we won't have to do that next year, so that's a positive. $444 for maintenance repair, $796 for equipment rental, $344 for a repair of a trailer, $64 for a chainsaws.
Thank you, as usual. Hearing and appeals. Again, this hearing to consider approval of the Urban Water Master Plan will be continued until next meeting, but we do want to have comments from the public. So anyone that wishes to speak on this issue, I have one, Mary Webb. And
Mary Webb, I'm confused. So we're supposed to comment on a plan we don't have.
Just your thoughts.
Okay. Well, my thoughts on the plan were that we should have seen it by June of this year, and that we should have at least, hopefully, the public will have at least 30 days to review the plan before we comment on the plan. My comments would be that it needs extensive revision because the 2005 plan is completely out of date now. I'm requesting that any indication that there should be a 50% quality of life increase in water usage needs to be completely removed out of there. Water conservation needs to be described by commercial use and residential use, and to Mr. Berenger's point, I'm not talking about revealing people's customer billing records by name and whether Mickey Burton uses two units and I use 45 every month. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, how much average use the residences are using, or what the use is overall without naming names, and what the commercial use is overall every month, without naming whether it's the Castle Inn or the Lodge or whatever, just what the use is. In conservation, I think the community has done a great job. Residential conservation has done a great job. I don't know what the commercial has done. We don't have any records. I don't know if they've been retrofitted. I haven't seen any information that they've had. They all have low-flow toilets now, or they all have low-flow showers, or how much they're using on landscape irrigation. There's just no data. So I'd like to see all that data. Any reporting to the California Urban Water Conservation Council, we need to see those reports. I think that the CCSD is a signatory to the California Urban Water Conservation Council, but they have not been submitted. Mediation of MTBE needs to be really clear whether or not MTBE has been completely remediated, or if it doesn't matter anymore. If we're not going to pump out of SR4 or SR3 anymore, that's great. So be it. Then SR1 and SR3, that's great. Then SR4 is our new well, and there is no MTBE in SR4. I'd like to have that clear in that report, so people like Lois Capps aren't confused about whether or not we have MTBE contamination or not. And information on in-stream flow studies. They have been recommended by the Coastal Commission in two different appeals, and in-stream flows have never been done. What it would cost to do in-stream flow studies to see what we need for the endangered species in our creeks, whether or not we can afford to do something like that, but just to have some kind of report on where we're going with in-stream flow studies. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Perfect. You have 8 seconds to spare.
And just for clarification, as required by statute, the plan will have to be made available to the public prior to the public hearing. The statute doesn't have a time frame. There was a request for 30 days. I'll leave that up to staff and the board's discretion. But there will be a need to release the document for public review, and the public hearing will be re-noticed in accordance with the statute.
The public hearing is going to be continued to at least the next board meeting, or at least when it's considered again, so that people will have already seen the report and then can make another public comment.
Yes, and just for clarification, I've suggested that the public hearing be re-noticed in accordance with the requirements of the statute as far as publication and so on.
Could I ask a question? Would it be appropriate then for us, when we get the agenda next month, for that plan to be complete, can we notice now that we're going to open the hearing next month rather than pushing it off another month after that? In other words, if we have 7 days worth of, I get my agenda packet about 7 days before the meeting. So if it's made to the public at the same time, couldn't we notice the fact that it will be on the agenda next month, and then after we hear it, we can continue it to the following meeting and to close it? Is that the process?
Again, I'll leave it to
further thought on that too. First of all, I thought Ms. Webb's comments were very good. I'm in the middle of this right now on a lot of these points that she brought up. As far as production of the report, if we want to have a 30-day public review, then it would be the February board meeting when you would actually adopt it.
Right.
So I anticipate it wrapping up probably the second week of January, the way things are going. I'm struggling with a lot of the data collection that was pointed out as far as getting out of MOMS. Just in practical terms, not really in regulatory terms, I don't think the Urban Water Management Plan Act specifies an advanced public review period, and, you know, as far as number of days, but just practical. You know, I think if we try to do it in the January board meeting, that meeting I believe was moved up to the 19th, if I recall. It's been moved up a week in time, and I don't know what the scheduling reason was, but that doesn't give people much time to look at it. So,
yeah.
You know, that would be my thought, is try to get it out there, you know, maybe middle of the month in January, and let people, you know, have time to review before, say, the February, if, you know, provided Jerry is okay with that.
So, Clift.
Yeah, my preference is that you publish it just as soon as it's finished, and there's a minimum of a 30-day public review. So that would put us February.
And I'd also like the opportunity for legal review once that document is finished. So,
right.
I'm hearing that the board is okay with February.
Sure.
I would consider it finished when it's legal. The legal review is completed, and then let the public have at least 30 days.
I think that's a good idea. I support the community having an opportunity 30 days to review it. It's a pretty in-depth document. So, you know, 30 days is you're not going to sit down and read it all in one reading setting. So that's fine.
I do have a strong preference to have it done by the middle of January. I mean, we're already 6 months behind, and I just hate to see mission creep happen.
But the suggestion here is as soon as it's legally vetted, 30 days from that point, so that automatically takes it into the February meeting for approval. And that should be the adamant goal, I guess, huh?
With engineer with copies to the board of directors, a memo raising concerns about the 2005 water master plan, water management plan. And I don't want to rehearse all that because I included a lot of footnotes and things, but I want to give the five major points about that 2005 plan I asked. Number one, the 2005 plan said that there would be surveys of water use in Cambria. My question was, were they ever done? There are all sorts of subheadings as to what was going to be done to make sure you had a good survey of water use in Cambria. I have no idea whether that was ever done, although it was an official plan of the board. Number two, the official plan from the 2005 also said that there would be a comprehensive annual water audit. I have no idea whether that's ever been done. I'd like to know whether it's been done and whether the district has adopted any further or will adopt any further actions like that in the 2010 plan, which is now 2011, which you will adopt in 2012. Number three, my question, what is the history of specific retrofits overseen by the CCSD from 2005 to 2011? I know what happened up to 2005 because at that point, Ben Bohr gave a wonderful detailed report to this board in your previous embodiment. But since 2005, I haven't the vaguest idea, even though it was in the 2005 plan, to do these retrofits. Number four, I won't quote all this, but as you know, your official policy as the board of this district is that you will increase the regular usage rate from 12 to 18 units. It is self-evident to me, but I am not always glorific a quirk. It is clear that you need to undo that before you adopt the new urban water management plan. They are totally incompatible. And so if you take the plan in your February meeting to adopt officially, you better have in your January meeting or earlier on the February agenda an undoing of that board policy. Number five, in the 2005 report, it refers to the water conservation coordinator. I know that there is no longer such. There is now, I'm glad to hear, a weekly meeting on conservation. I haven't the vaguest idea what goes on at that meeting, and it would be refreshing to me to get a consistently regular report on the first item in your water master plan that you said we should do, namely conservation. So I'd really like to have updates regular on what you construe as conservation measures fulfilling your water master plan. Last, I ask, and I'll just read this because it's not explaining water use in Cambria. And they had a wonderful chart that did exactly this for the overall use, so we knew who was using how many units. I'd just like a little more specificity of categories. Thank you.
Thank you. Amanda Rice.
Thank you. Thank you, President McKinnon. Once again, I am completely blown away by the level of work that the community voluntarily does to educate themselves on what's going on with the district and water use. And I second everything that Elizabeth and Mary Webb said because they are absolutely right on. And it is not an easy plan to update. My comment mainly is, I would like to comment after I see the PowerPoint because if this is a document that's still in process, there are people in this room that two of whom you just heard from who may have comments that might be useful and helpful in preparing the plan and before it's even released. So maybe just a thought. Thank you.
Okay. Finally, Jim Webb.
My name's Jim Webb again. Thank you for an opportunity to comment on this plan prior to its debut. And I would like to reiterate a comment that this might be a splendid time to follow up on then-President Cliff's comment that he's tired of being beaten up over the 50% quality of life resolution that was passed by a prior board. Might be a good time to make a motion and agendize the repeal of that resolution. Secondly, as far as the actual plan itself, assumptions that went into that plan and have been shown to be false need to be corrected. In particular, and I'm basing this on information from Corolo Engineers, which I don't know if that's the right source or not, but I think they prepared it. Anyway, they did projections of demand based on more people per household than, in fact, the 2010 census shows that we have. And they also projected demand based on a per capita use rating. When we talk about recycling, and people say, my God, if you do recycling, we're going to have saltwater intrusion and there's going to be chaos. I think what we could do is something much less ambitious. And I simply point to the fact that throughout Cambria, and I know many, many people who have little trailers or old trucks, and they have tanks on the back of them. And they go over to San Simeon, and they pick up non-potable water when they need it, and they come back, and they water their yard with it. And they do that voluntarily. There's no incentive except maybe lowering their current water use. And it just seems to me, as a community, there should be a way of facilitating a program like that, encouraging a program like that, where it's not all the burden, the entire burden isn't shouldered by the residents, but in fact it's something that is backed by the CCSD and encouraged. How that would take place, I don't know. We've had H2O to go trucks that used to come around and people could get their yards watered or their non-landscaped areas that they want to landscape. That might be a way of taking care of that. Anyway, I think that perhaps instead of taking such an ambitious approach to recycling, smaller community-based programs might be more effective. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. A question at this point, General Manager, is the PowerPoint appropriate to show based on the comments that have been made from the public?
It's six or seven slides, okay. So it won't be really long. I've asked Bob to keep it pretty short. So to answer your question, I don't think it would hurt anything.
I would also say that it's impressive, really, that we have such community members that feel so committed to this place and invest their own time to come up with not only data but ideas. And that's what we're trying to be. We're trying to express the will of the people, and it's helpful to get this kind of response. So go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, just a point of order, too. I would certainly recommend I would certainly be receptive to any comments people might have after the PowerPoint if it's acceptable to the board to field more questions afterwards. So without further ado, we'll try to get 8A up there and running.
So we don't have that much to go.
I think they're just having technical difficulties in the back, so
maybe I could ask a question while we're sure. Involved here. And I appreciate Jim's reference to getting beat up with the 50% water thing. When you made a presentation previously about the 5% reduction in water usage, Did we take an action at that time to instigate that as our policy, or was that just simply going to be something that's going to be in the Water Master Plan?
That is actually part of the updates to the Urban Water Management Planning Act.
So if
that
if,
all you know water purveyors have to set a conservation goal, and that's how we came up with that 5% reduction in meeting the act. So that, in a sense, would take away that 50% increase.
Okay. And so let's very specifically point that out in the Water Master Plan, because meeting that goal absolutely wipes out 18.
Well, let me
even might wipe out 12.
If I can qualify a few things here, though. And when you look at the sizing of water facilities, you always look at your maximum day demand. And so it's not a linear straight across demand use that you have throughout, you know, 365 days of the year. In our case, usually that happens around July 4th. So we look at reliability and contingency, how you respond to catastrophic loss and so forth in the sizing facilities. That goes beyond annual use. These numbers that we're dealing with on the Management Plan Act are annual use numbers. So there's variability during the year. I did look at the max day demand ratio to average day, you know, 365-day averages. For Cambria in the last 10 years, it's about a little under 1.6. So you take that average day, you multiply it by 1.6. That gives your max day demand, which typically occurs on 4th of July weekend. So that's really when you're pumping water into the tanks and so forth. From an engineering perspective, you're looking at that worst-case scenario in sizing things so you have enough capacity to meet that variability during the year. So there will still be a need to have a greater capacity. In some cases, it's a matter of semantics where things get all confused. And I'll be the first one to admit the old master plan report could have been clearer on this point. And so that is part of what I'm trying to address in the Urban Water Management Plan as well, some of that variability with backup supply and so forth. But the 50% quality of life, that's obviously
our usage. And our usage right now is below the 12, if I think, as an average. Anyhow, let's get that out of there, whatever.
Good. Noted. Thank
Either
you.
Either that or let's have a... I want an agenda item that says this board
rescinds it.
Yeah, repudiates that.
Yeah,
well, take your pick.
It looks like they're continuing.
We have one additional comment from that Nancy Anderson. Would you like to step up before the PowerPoint? You don't have the PowerPoint yet, Bob, right?
It's
ready.
There's technical problems in the back, so we can't seem to get it on the screen. So maybe that's a sign that we shouldn't do it. Eh?
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Nancy Anderson, a resident of Cambria, and I just wanted to make two comments. And the first one is that I was very pleased to hear the board's openness to getting public information and public input into the water management plan. I do think the 30-day period will be very beneficial for those of us in the community to learn about the plan before we have to decide about it. I also wanted to commend Jim Webb for his comments about the conservation that's actually happening in Cambria. And I'd like to mention something that my husband and I have done. We're now capturing all the rainwater that comes onto our roof through our rain gutters. We use that for outside watering. We are connected so that we can get recycled water, which costs a great deal of money, actually. And this is something that the board could consider, a plan where people can get that extra water to be used for gardens. That kind of extra help would really be a big boost to water conservation. I know that, like Jim Webb was mentioning, one of our neighbors, who is now well into his 80s, has big, almost like rain barrels that he takes off in his truck to get water, and he uses that to water his garden. There's a lot of that going on in Cambria, and I think one of the things that CCSD can do is to find ways to reward their customers for doing that kind of conservation and recycling of water. We have two tanks.
How much gallonage, any idea?
I do know that. I have written down somewhere, but I can't remember right now. We use that rainwater, and then when that water is gone, we have an indication that we need water, and then we call Windsor, who comes and delivers the water. Okay. That turns out to be fairly expensive.
And that water is from their own wells. That's not from our...
I believe that comes from yours.
Our pump out.
My understanding is that comes from CCSD. But that would be something that we would appreciate finding out.
Okay.
Right. When I go get my water, I'll take a tank on my truck, and I take it down to the... You can get that recycled water. That's free. I think that if Windsor is giving, he's either giving you water from his wells, which might be very expensive, but he also drives by that same recycled area, and I don't know whether he picks it up or not. So you should find out whether it's recycled or new water, because he might charge differently.
It's an good issue. Point. I'll investigate that. Thank you.
I know several people from San Simeon that appreciate our free water there too, because they come down and get it because of their problems on water situation too. So they have tanks on their trailers and they use that same spigot.
Well, I will certainly investigate that. Thank you.
Yes. Just as a point of clarification, it's really non-potable water versus recycled. Recycled is usually Title 22 tertiary water. This is a water that is the result of kind of between our wastewater discharge field and our potable well field. So it's recycled from the standpoint of, you know, from a natural process, but it's not recycled from the standpoint of coming out of the back of the wastewater treatment plant and meeting Title 22 standards, tertiary treatment, which is by definition truly recycled water. And it'll be interesting conversation to have when we talk about, is that a concept that we want to eventually evaluate, because when we do use the terminology recycled water, it really does consist of bringing the treatment plant to the next level of disinfection from secondary treatment to tertiary treatment. So it'll be a good conversation. So it's a non-potable well versus recycled water. It's recycled water by definition, sort of, kind of, but not really by Title 22 standards. So now I sound like Bob.
Welcome to my world.
Are we on, Bob, or are we
January? They're
yeah. And Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Or Happy Holidays, however you want to talk about.